16 hours spread over.
Okay, so I'm going to try to pick off where we left from the Or Kostim, from the Nes of the Kishon Eish, and show you basically, we'll do the Ramban, how he, what the events that transpire in Avraham Avinu's life between Or Kostim and basically Lech Lecha. Okay, and we're going to start with the Ramban, because the Ramban's kind of straightforward. I mean, he's incredibly creative in pulling out, like, from these psukim, like the story that the Torah is not openly describing. And like, and it's pretty like open in the Ramban. It's like just the Ramban's read. It reads clear. It's like story time. You know, it's good stuff. But I'm doing the Ramban first, because the Ramban is something that's like, it's like clear and it follows the order of the Torah. And maybe next week, we'll see. I don't think we'll have time this week. I doubt it. But Rashi is like a totally different shita, and it's like incredibly difficult Rashi shita. How to work this stuff out. And it's all because of one Rashi. You never read it later on in the Torah, and it forces you to relearn every other Rashi earlier. It's like a very difficult position, Rashi. So we're going to start off with the Ramban. But here are the basic psukim are the end of Parshas Noach, and then the very beginning of Lech Lecha. So we'll start in Perek Yud Aleph, Parshas Noach, and we'll start with Pasuk Chavav. Okay, so just to get the psukim, then we'll go to the Ramban. Okay, this is Vayichi Terach Shiv Mishana Vayolidus Avram Es Nacho Ves Haran. So Terach, you got to kind of try to, it's like a story. The whole thing is basically a story of events. So you're going to try to keep in mind a little bit the names and the places and the, you know, the events and the order of things. So Terach is the father, right? The base is, and he has three children, Avraham, who the Ramban and Rashi, I believe, learn are the oldest. Avram's the oldest. And Nahor, Avram's younger brother, and Haran. Okay, Haran was the youngest. Then Eile Todos Terach, Fon repeats it. Haran Holidus Lot. So Lot is the son of Haran. Good. So we have three brothers, Avram, Nahor, and Haran, and Lot is the son of Haran. Okay. Then Vayamas Haran al Pnei Terach Aviv Beres Malatob Or Kostim. So Haran was definitely born in Or Kostim, and Haran dies, and that's the whole story of the Kivshon Eish, where Terach told Nimrod about Avraham, that he broke his idols, and they threw him into the Kivshon Eish, and then Haran said, "I'm with Avraham." They threw Haran into the Kivshon Eish, and Haran wasn't saved. So that we've discussed. You'll see the Ramban talks about it. We'll go through the Ramban a little bit on that. Then this is where it gets interesting. So they get married. We'll skip a couple psukim. Then pasuk lamed aleph. Vayikach Terach es Avram beno. So Terach takes Avraham his son. Ves Lot ben Haran ben beno, and then Haran, and then ves Sarai kalaso eshes Avram beno. Fine. Lot Sarah Avraham. Vayetsu itam Or Kostim, and they go with them. Like Sarah and, like Rashi learns, Sarah and Lot go with Avraham and Terach, and they go Me'or Kostim, from Or Kostim, which is where the whole Kivshon Eish happened, Nimrod, the whole thing. La'leches Eretz Kenan, they go to Eretz Kenan. We don't know why. Why are they going to Eretz Kenan? It's not clear. Why they're leaving Or Kostim, at least we understand, because, you know, the king's trying to kill them. Fine. But why are they going to Eretz Canaan? And specifically, we don't know. Vayavo ad Haran. But they don't go, they don't get to Eretz Canaan. They get to Haran v'yeshu sham, and they stop there. Okay? And then the Torah records the death of Terach, even though it happens many years later. But Rashi explains why it discusses it then. Okay, that's the end of Parshas Noach. Right? That Terach, Nahor remains wherever he was. According to Ramban, he stays in Haran.
He's a brother.
He was Avram's brother, correct? He is the grandfather of Rivka, or the great grandfather of Rivka and Rachel and Leah, right? And Nahor stays behind. Either he was always in Haran to begin with, or I'm going to try to avoid those kinds of issues of where Avram was really born. Rashi learns Avram was born in Or Kostim. but the Ramban learns a little differently. Okay, we'll take this up in a second. We try to avoid those details. But they leave or costume, and they're going to Eretz Canaan, and they end up, they don't, according to Ramban, they don't get to Eretz Canaan, they get to Haran. Okay? Then the next parsha starts, Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Aleph. Vayomer Shem Avram Lechocha Me'artzucha Me'u'atucha Beis Avicha. Leave, and Avram's in Haran at this point, which is clear, it'll become clear in a second, Avram's in Haran. So leave your land and your birthplace and your father's house and go to the land that I will show you. God doesn't tell him exactly which land it is. Okay? Okay, fine. And then Avram leaves. He goes to the land that God's going to show him. Lot goes with Abraham. And then Avram ben Chamesh Shana v'Shivim Shana v'Tzeis HaMecharam. And this is an important pasuk, which comes back later, is that Avram is 75 years old. When he leaves Haran to go to Eretz Canaan, he's 75 years old. And Lot goes with him. Lot leaves with him in Haran, and they go to Eretz Canaan. And Avram is 75 years old. Okay, fine. Rashi takes that up. He says, that's one of Ramban's problems on Rashi. He says, Me'artzecha. V'halo kfar yatsa b'shamim aviv u'bad Haran. Right, his land is really Orkastim and the Babylonians, and that's where he's born, right? Ela kacham elo hisrachik od misham etzei beis avicha. It's like, I know you've already left your land and your birthplace, but go even further, go leave your father's house. So it's saying Hisrachik od Misham. That's how Rashi is forced to learn. His father had left with him to Haran. They were in Haran together. So that's what Rashi is learning. You can see Rashi is not the Pasha. This whole Rashi is, you have to relearn all these Rashis later on. We're going to take up this Rashi, maybe next week. But right now we're going to try to focus on Ramban. Ramban's much, much simpler. Okay, good. I'll summarize in the end, basically. But then Vayav Avram Ba'aretz Ad Mokom Shechem, right? So Avram goes into Eretz Canaan. And then last, Vayir Shem Avram Vayomer Lazacha Tenis Aretz Azos Vayivin Shem Izbecha Shem Hanira Elav. So God appears to him and tells him, this is the land I'm going to give to your children, your Zerah. And then Avram builds a Mizbeach, right? God tells him, this is the land, you've come to the land. Okay, good. Now, that's basically the Psukim, right? That we have Terach and Avraham and Lot and Sarah leave or Kastim. They're going to Eretz Canaan for some unknown reason, but they don't get there. They end up in Haran, okay? Then Avram gets the tzivoy of next parsha's Lech Lecha. Okay, he says, leave Beis Avicha, leave Haran, leave your father. The Avram leaves Terach behind in Haran, where Terach dies, ultimately, like 100 years later, or whatever, 80 years, 60 years later, something like that. And Avram and Lot go to Eretz Canaan, and that's where God tells him, oh, this is the land I'm going to give to you as inheritance forever. Okay? Okay, good. You'll see Rashi doesn't want these at all. But now we'll take up these, the Rambans. Like the last, it's the Ramban, one of the last Rambans in Noach. So he spells it and he kind of tries to work all this stuff out. Okay. It's Pasuk Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Chav Ches. Okay, so like I said, this is Ramban. It's like it's one of these very clear Rambans, okay, as opposed to last week. It's like the opposite, right? It's like the opposite Ramban. It's like so clear, just like the whole thing flows, more or less. Okay, so he quotes the Rashi, Pnei Terech Aviv Be'eretz Moladato. Kosev Rashi Kederech Divrei Rabbeinu. He quotes the Rashi, which quotes the Chazals. Terech Kibal Avram Beno Lifnei Nimrod Al Shviras Tzalmov B'Shlichol Kivshan. Terech complained about Avraham because Avram broke his idols. Terech owned an idol shop and Avram broke them all. V'haran Yashav V'amar Im Avram Notzeach Anishalo. Haran equivocated. If Avram wins, I'll be with him. V'im Nimrod Notzeach Anishalo. But if Nimrod wins and Avram gets killed, I'm with Nimrod. Haran says, when Avram was saved, Haran says, I'm with Avraham. They threw him into the Kivshan, he was burnt. Okay, fine. And that's what it means. Or kastan, it means the fire, the kifshan of the Chaldeans means the kifshan ha'esh of Bavel. Okay? Then he quotes Menachem Pirush, means bika. Okay, fine. Good. And that's in, like that's Rashi quotes that, so you can learn it means or means literally it means a valley. Okay, that's just a pshat. Another way to learn. Okay. And Va'inyan, this is the Ramban speaking, Va'inyan shekiblu rabosenu bezehu emes, and this whole story that the Chazal had a Kabbalah on is in fact true. Va'ani mevar also. And the Ramban says he's going to explain it, bring it all out. Okay, how Chazal knew all these things, and the whole, he's going to flesh out the story, bring out the details of the story. Okay. Now just before we go into this Ramban, I'm going to skip the first, I'm really going to do the middle of the Ramban. Skip the very beginning part and the very end part. But I was just thinking one idea on that mashal. So you're doing it again. I thought, why did, this idea of why did Avraham break the idols of his father? Right? Like the Medrash says, the story, you know the story is Terach had an idol shop and he left Avraham in charge one day, and a woman came in with like a mincha that she wanted to offer, like a bowl of flour that she wanted to offer to the Avodah Zarahs, and she gave it to Avraham, and what Avraham did was, he's supposed to offer in front of them. So what he did was, instead of doing that, he broke all the idols with a hammer or something like that. He put a hammer in front on the hand of the biggest idol. He didn't break that one. He put the flour bowl, the mincha, in front of that one. And when Terach came home and he saw all his idols are broken, he says to Avram, what the hell, what happened here? This is crazy, right? And Avram says, look, they all started fighting. They each wanted the mincha, the flour, and they started fighting with each other. And the biggest one grabbed the hammer and smashed them, okay? And he beat them and he took the flour. And Terach says to him, are you crazy? Idols can't talk, they can't walk, they can't have a conversation, they can't beat each other up. I know you broke it. Okay, it's clear to me you broke it, right? So Avram says to Terach, if they can't talk and they can't walk and they can't eat, so then why are you worshiping them? Oh, Terach says, you know what? You're smart aleck, you're going to Nimrod, okay? And that's when he brings him to Nimrod, and then the story continues, right? So the question is like this, is like, why did Avram do this? It's a pretty big move to go busting up all the idols, right? Avram, he's a man of words, debate, right? Like the Rambam explained, he's debating, has arguments, logical arguments, and just start being a vandal, just start destroying all the idols, and it's a pretty bold move. What caused him to do that? It's his father's business, exactly. You know, his father's not going to take too kindly to that. So why did he do that, right? So I was just thinking, I think, first of all, it seems to me that Avraham didn't really expect that Nimrod, that his father would turn him in. That's the first thing. I think Avraham thought that Terach would, you know, I don't think he thought Terach would turn him over to the king for execution. The Rav likes to say, the Rav said that Terach was a pathological father. It's like not a normal thing for a father to turn his son in, even in this situation. But, you know, it's Avraham, I guess, didn't think his father would really turn him over. But I think what Avram did is, Avram basically, he would go around arguing and debating people, and apparently the king didn't really care so much at that point, until basically Terach brought it to Nimrod's attention. Nothing was going on. But is Terach wasn't going along with it. Avram's father wasn't going along with it. But not necessarily because, like, he didn't hear Avram's philosophical arguments and logical reasonings, okay? He heard it. He's just saying to Avram, look, we own an idol shop here. Okay, it's not good for business. Okay, it's just like, what are you trying to accomplish? You're going to get yourself killed, the king's going to kill you. Is you're going to kill the whole Parnassa? How are we going to eat? You know, we own an idol shop. It's just stop with all. Basically, Terach didn't go along with it. What are you making a big deal? There's one god, there's many gods. It's like the whole thing is like you're getting worked up and you're starting a whole revolution, a whole rebellion over something. Just go with the flow. Don't cause such a ruckus. Okay, and Avram felt that basically Terach was basically not hearing the arguments, not going along with Avram, because it was his business, it was his money, it was his parnasa. Okay, so he felt that if he broke his idols, ultimately, he showed him, this is really ultimately why you're clinging to these idols, because it's your business and it's your parnasa, and this is what's causing you. Once you lose the whole shop, all the idols are broken, he's going to have nothing, no longer anything, you know, that's holding him back. Exactly. That's what Avram was hoping. I think Avram was hoping that once he removed the idol, once he removed the impediment of his business, then he's going to say, all right, forget about it. But if he didn't see, what's that, what's Terach going to do in that situation? The shop is ruined. What are you going to do? You know, Terach basically went crazy and turned Avram in, and the rest of his history. But I think that that's the move. Why Avram? It's a very extreme move. You want to argue with somebody, break down their religion, show them why their religion is false and they're following vanity and it's nonsense, fine. But to take a hammer and smash up all their entire business, their shop, it's an extreme move. So I think maybe that's what Avram thought. He thought his father wasn't listening because of the business, the money. That's why he went in and broke it. But I'm just speculating. I don't know. Okay, fine.
But his buddies, would he have done that for his buddies?
Would he have done what for his buddies as well?
Broken all their idols that they owned in the shop.
Would Avram have done that for his buddies?
Yeah, they were good buddies.
Great buddies. The best of buddies who bust up your stuff.
Yeah.
It could be he's just saying that basically he held Terach had this emotional, the money. So it wasn't a big question about truth. In Terach's mind, it was a question about pragmatism and business and money. And it's not good for business. This whole philosophy, Avram, you've come up with, it's not good for business. You know what I mean? Try to come up with a different kind of spin that maybe we can... Maybe your God looks like something, you know? You know, and that's what basically he brought Avram. Ultimately, Avram got frustrated. He held there's no other way to convince his father. And he broke all his idols. And I guess it was a calculated move. It's hard to believe that Avram thought he was going to kill him or turn him in, because then it doesn't really... Avram certainly wasn't relying on a miracle. And why would he bring that upon himself? So it must be he didn't think that his father was really good, which is sensible. Not to think your father would turn you in.
But it sounds like he feels that really the best thing to do, if you're not going to get God, is to just go around smashing idols.
If you think it'll work.
Right, it's not like an aggressive thing you're saying. You're just saying he built this particular hang-up.
By his father.
Right.
Yeah,
so
right.
He wouldn't do it with anyone.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not going around to all the idol shops and breaking them. It was his father. And I'm sure they had many conversations over the dinner table, about idols and the wrong with idols and why you should follow Yichud Hashem and the evil of idolatry. And Terach was just saying to Avram, what are you doing? You're killing the business. You're killing the shop.
No, but I mean, even if it wasn't his father, but he had a really good relationship with someone, he knew that that was their issue.
Right.
And he did it because he thought it was a teaching tool.
Correct.
Because of this
we
is
see,
what you should do to idols.
Rachel also did something similar by Lavan. She took his idols. Mm-hmm. She hid them. That's why Lavan chased them. Right? Chased and he thought Yaakov stole the idols. But Rachel thought somehow that by stealing Lavan's idols and taking them away from him, that would somehow help him. But, it doesn't seem like it. These moves don't usually work out. You learn from the Avos. It doesn't really work out. But it seems I guess there's a situation where you think that might...
It's not aggressive.
It's aggressive. It's a little bit aggressive to start breaking somebody's. But sometimes that's the move. Sometimes that's the move. But I'm just saying, you do see in these cases by Rachel and Lavan and Avram and Terach, so it didn't really work out how they anticipated. But I don't know if this necessarily means it's a bad move. I don't know. Okay, fine. But that's just, I want to move a little forward to the rest of the story. Okay, fine. So now, I'm going to skip to this first, third of the Ramban. He basically, it's interesting. I just don't want to get caught up in too many details. Basically, his point is Avraham was born in Haran. Okay? And Haran is Me'ever Hanar, Avram Ha'ivri. Avram was not born in Or Kasdim, which is in, Bavel. That's where B'nai Cham are. But rather, Avram was born in Haran. And Terach and Avram moved down to Or Kasdim when Avram was young. Okay? Nahor stayed in Haran, and Avraham and Terach moved down to Haran, moved down to Or Kasdim, and Haran was born in Or Kasdim. Okay, that's basically the first third of the Ramban. He tries to show you, and there's a city where Chazal said Avram was imprisoned for 10 years, which is called Kuta, I think, and that's, Ramban says, he has evidence from people who were there that it means it's close to Haran, this city, Kuta, that Avram was supposedly imprisoned, according to Chazal. King threw him in prison. Okay, so now that's the first part of the establishing. Then that's one of the major fights between the Ramban and Rashi and the Ibn Ezra, is that where was Avram born? But I don't exactly know what the ideas that come out from the whole thing are, so we're kind of going to skip that issue unless something comes. But I'm going to pick up the Ramban again from where he starts quoting the Rambam. He says, The Inyanam Kubalazat. So it's like a third of the way down. In the Shavel, it's like the bottom of page Ayin Beis. So you guys see it? Inyanam Kubalazat? It's like two lines from the bottom on page Ayin Beis in the Shavel. Okay. Good. The Inyanam Kubalazat, Nimsa Gankim Besifre Kadmone Goyim. So this whole story, okay, of Avram and Nimrod and the fight between them, it's found in like the books of the, I think it was the Samaritans or something, or the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They kept certain historical records, and it was in their records, something along these lines. And the Rambam, Kmo Shekazav Harav Mor Nevuchim, and the Rambam quotes it in the Mor Nevuchim. There's a chapter where he dedicates towards going through the in the histories of the Goyim. They have something of the story of Avram. So he says, Ki hiskru b'sefer avodos ha'achar ha-mitzriyim. Ki, so this is what's mentioned in their books. Ki Avram asher nulad b'kuta. Avram, not with a hey, but Avram, who was born in Kuta, the city which is near Charan. Chalak al das hamba unshay ovdim ha-shemesh. So he argued on the masses, right, the opinions of the masses, who used to worship the sun. It's a little different than Chazal. Chazal held that they, Nimrod was worshiping the fire, they're saying worship the sun, whatever. V'nasan ha-melech also beis ha-selhar, and the king imprisoned him. V'ayimahim betochachos yamim rab b'sham, and he was arguing with them for many days. Achar kach pochan ha-melech shiashchis alav arzo. Then at some point the king became afraid that this rebel, Avram, was going to cause his entire land to rebel against him and cause a breakdown in like the society. The Yasser bin Adam Emunasam, and he's going to cause the people to be removed from their faith and their belief in Avodah Zarah, which was how the king controlled the people. The Garish also El Kitzei Eretz Kanan, and he drove him to the edges of Eretz Kanan, Achar Shalakach Kohono, after he took all his money. Okay, fine. So that's their story. V'hine Al Koponim B'makamahu Be'eretz Akastim Nas Nesel Avram Avinu O Nesel. So in any event, based on the Ramban saying, whether you go by their story, according to the Rambam, the Chazal, is something, there was a nace that occurred for Avram Avinu in or Kastim. Either it was a nace nistar, the hidden miracle, Shinasam Belev Osamelach Latzilo, Vishlo Yimisenu Vahotzi Osam Besasor Vashilach Lanavsho. Either it was like a miracle that was not obvious and overt, where basically God put in the king's heart to basically let, for some reason, miraculously, he let him. Avram go free and let him walk out of prison, something like that. Oh, Nes Meforsam, oh, like an open miracle, Shehashlicha Lekivshanesh, Venitza Kaderozenu, or it's like Rashi and Chazal, that he actually openly threw him into a fiery pit, and he was saved. Now he's going to just take up the Ibn Ezra. Val Yiftach Osach Rabbi Avram, because Yosef. So don't get persuaded by the Ibn Ezra and his questions. Omer, Shalos Sipar Kasa Zapela. Right, the Ibn Ezra, he loves it. The Ibn Ezra said, "How could it be? There's such a big miracle. Why isn't the Torah talk about it? And really, that they threw him Avram into a fiery pit, and he was saved miraculously. So don't you think the Torah should record something, a miracle like that? Why isn't the Torah record it?" So if the Ibn Ezra didn't like it, it must be it's not literal. It didn't really occur. So the Rabban says, "Don't fall for the Ibn Ezra's words. He's trying to trick you. Okay, don't be persuaded by him." Ki od etin lechatam v'raya bezecho yotzebo. Because the Ramban further on is going to explain to you. Later on, he talks about it. Okay? That's the Ibn Ezra. This is the Ibn Ezra. Okay, fine. Avala Goyim Ahim lo hiskiruzeh besifram. So the Goyim obviously don't mention this miracle in their books. Lefishahim chokin al daito. They argued on Avram. They're by Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and you know they're writing the history books. So they're not going to mention that there was a miracle done for Avram to save him because they basically don't hold by Avram. Yeah, go ahead. He does it also by Yocheved. I know there's by Yocheved that she was born between the walls. So it comes out, if you say that, then it comes out that she had Moshe Rabbeinu when she was like 110 years old or something. And he says it can't be because the Torah would have mentioned openly Yocheved was that old. It talked about Sarah, she's 90 years old. Why is it talking about Yocheved? So if it was like such a miracle, the Torah would have discussed it. So Ramban does a similar thing, similar point. It's not every miracle does the Torah have to record. And here he's going to give you an explanation of why the Torah doesn't tell you, even though there's a miracle, it was an open miracle, it's a kifshanesh, still, why does the Torah not record it? Okay, why? It says, so the Ovid Avodah Zarah, they thought about this miracle, Shehu Maisek Shafim, that it was just like Avram had some sort of sorcery. Inyan Moshe Beinu, Mitzrayim, Betchias Maisav, just like the Egyptians believed about Moshe Beinu that it was sorcery, right? They didn't think it was really a proof. They thought he had some magic band. Same thing as that's what the Ovid Avodah Zarah thought about Avram. Because the Torah is an honest book, and if it was going to bring down the Nes, then it's going to have to bring down the contrary opinions that people argued and said, no, it's not, it wasn't a miracle, but really Avram did it through some sort of sleight of hand, some trick he had in his, you know,
why?
His, well,
why would I have to bring it down?
Why does it have to bring it down? Because like it's like dishonest to bring down like what you're holding to be a proof, but like there, people argued on that. They said that wasn't a proof. People in that generation said that miracle, that wasn't really evidence that there was a real miracle done, and there's Ashkacha Pratis for Avram. He just knows magic tricks. And to bring it down as a raya, and not to bring down the opinion of those who argued about it, is like it's like a dishonesty. It's dishonest. You're making it seem like it was open and everybody who was there agreed to it,
no,
but it's not true.
It was an ace.
You can say it was an ace, but the people there didn't agree to that. So you're not going to bring down their opinion. You're just going to totally. That's not honest.
You misinterpreted the event. You have to.
Oh, so you'd be have to.
You don't have to say that the whole Am was convinced that it was an ace. You say it was an ace.
I mean, the Torah should say it's an ace and not bring down their opinion that it was not an ace.
I don't see what the problem is with that.
You don't see the problem with that.
No.
Does that mean that when the Torah does say it, there was no opposition to it?
You're correct.
Miracles?
Like, for example, at Sinai, right? Everybody. It was all the Jews, but there weren't any Jews there who said, you know what, I don't think that was really a miracle. If there were, Torah has to record it. And in Mitzrayim, we'll just finish up. I hear a question. He says, okay, and since Moshe Rabbeinu was ultimately proven, because you have the 10 Makos, and you have ultimately to get to Makos Bechoros, and until it gets to a point where there's nobody, they say, Espel Elokimhi, or they have to be moved at some point, that they couldn't be done by their witchcraft, or their sorcery, mm-hmm. couldn't bring it about. So, but the Torah brings down their position, that originally they held it was really kshafim, it was really sorcery, and then ultimately it came to a point where they had to agree. But that's because in Mitzrayim, when Moshe Beinu, there's multiple miracles, and it was done in a way that demonstrated to them the truth and the veracity of the miracle. But by Avram, it was one miracle, and they claimed it wasn't a real miracle, and there was no real way to prove to them that it wasn't a miracle. So therefore, the Torah doesn't record the miracle itself, because it's going to have to bring down their position, and then you're going to have machlokas. And how do you prove one way or the other? Okay, so let's think about the question, your question. Let me think of the question. Yeah, there's another question. The Rambam says that Moshe Rabbeinu, Klai Yisrael, and Perek Chas in Sovia Torah. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu, Klai Yisrael didn't believe him because of all the miracles he did, and he split the sea and all that stuff. That's not why he believed him, because if you believe based upon a miracle, you still have a doubt. Maybe he did it through witchcraft and sorcery. And the only reason we believe in Moshe is because of Ma'amid Har Sinai, which is something different, right? So I don't want to get into why it's different, but it's eyewitness testimony, it's a different thing. It's not witchcraft, right? We heard the Nebuah. So, but you see that even the miracles of Mitzrayim, you could say it's possible, it's, right? So I mean, how clear, but I mean, they were moved. They were ultimately moved in Mitzrayim. So I don't know, it's a good question. I mean, it does seem to me like the Ramban is saying an unbelievable idea in the Torah, is that he's saying that if the Torah is going to claim that this is a miracle, and it's something that proves there's Ashkacha Pratis, he's going to claim that, so then it had to be clear from the event itself. It's not like, whether or not they ultimately agreed, fine, you're always going to have people who deny. But like, from the event itself, a person would be able to draw the conclusion that it really was a miracle. Not that really the event itself is ambiguous, and it's just like, how do you know it's a miracle? Well, God told you so. It's not gonna. It doesn't bring down stories like that. Where if the, what?
Well,
No, it's not true. Not every miracle. Sometimes you, like in Mitzrayim, eventually you can see that this wasn't, from the event itself, it became clear. Etzbelo Kimhi. You didn't have to rely on the fact that God tells you in the Torah it's a miracle. But from a study of the events, you're able to derive. It was. That's true. I mean, you're studying how you know the events occurred. Because the Torah is recording it for you. No, I know. That's, I mean, the fact that maybe the Torah is making up the whole stories kind of thing.
That's what the problem was in the first place. So that's the same.
No, but there's two types of lies. There's like an open lie. You just mamish write a book that's not true and make up lies. And then there's like, well, you're not going to do that, but you're just not going to mention the thing, you know, the opposite opinion, the divrei hacholken. And like, that's also a type of deception. It's like, it's like in these studies, scientific studies, they do all these studies to support a position or to disprove a position. So they only publish those things that support that, and they don't publish the trials and the studies that show that it was wrong. So like, you're not really lying. That's like a different type of thing, to really fabricate a scientific study to show that a certain drug has health benefits, right? But if you just show one study which shows that it has health benefits, but you don't publish the 99 that show that it has nothing, so it's like very misleading. But that's different than a guy who's just going to make up and pretend that there was a successful study.
You're saying that a person will say like, oh, the Torah would do something, like they wouldn't call it to be a whole, but they would do something, so great, let's just fabricate a story. No one's going to say that. Same person.
Well, they say the Ramban's saying the Torah won't even do the other thing. The Torah is not going to record an event and claim it as a miracle when from the event itself, it's not clear. It wouldn't have been, a person would not have been able to ascertain that it was a miracle. It was a miraculous event. Because you're going to have to quote the other positions. You can't just pretend that there's no other way to look at this. That's interesting, Ravon. I hear the problem. It's a good question. So there's a lot in this Ramban. It's a great Ramban. There's a lot of, and it's like, you're capable of at least understanding the pshat. That's what's so beautiful about it. But it's a good question.
But also, it's an appealing position. It's a position that just counters the Ramban. So to point out, so people might think that they could hold both. So he's pointing out that despite the fact that this is an appealing position, and if you believe what I'm saying is true, you can't hold that other position still.
Right. What do you mean? Yeah, Ken's just saying another way to learn it is that it's that anybody who reads the story, if you're going to read a story, there's some miracle. The person naturally can say, well, maybe it was some sort of sorcery, and the Torah is not even mentioning that possibility. It's not even dealing with it. I'm sure people brought that up. How does the Torah argue on that point, and how does it not mention the fact that, how do you reject that position? So it's like going to be obvious to anybody reading the Torah that there's another interpretation the Torah is not even recording, and it's like clearly a biased history. And so that's what it means. It's going to be clear. It'll be clear to everybody it's a biased history. Okay, but in any event, what you see from here is that the Ramban, and you have to try to understand this Ramban in terms of how you really apply it. But just like how open and honest the Torah is, that it's not going to, an event that has really different interpretations is going to mention, either it's going to mention the full other positions that argue on it, or it's not going to mention the event. If it can't treat of it fully in an honest way, then it's just not going to deal with it. It won't bring it up and pretend it's a proof when there's other ways to interpret it. Interesting, Ramban. Okay. Okay. Now we'll go a little further. V'zehu she'amar kasav ani Hashem asher tzeisicha me'er kastim loses l'charis aretz azos l'rishta. So that's what we're going to see later on is in the Bris Bein Besarim, towards the middle of Lech Lecha, is God says ani Hashem asher tzeisicha me'er kastim, who took you out of our kastim. Ki mila so tzeisicha tilmar al hanes, like the word ho tzeisicha, who took you out, like Yitziah, right? It teaches about a miracle. It's like indicative that there was a miracle performed in Or Kasdim. And the Rambam also, the Rambam himself mentioned that God did a nes for him and took him out of Or Kasdim in Perek Aleph and Vos Kochavim. Right, Rashi, Rambam, they all hold there's a miracle. It's like Asher Tzeicha Me'or Kasdim. That the Lashon Tzeicha sounds like there's a miracle. Ki lo amar she lakachticha Me'or Kasdim. Doesn't God say, I took you from Or Kasdim? Rather, I took you out of our custom. Misker Asir Meres Mitzrayim. Right, when God took us out of Eretz Mitzrayim, It means through miracles. So the exact same lashon it's using by Avram, that God took him out of Ur Kasdim, is a reference to the idea of the miracle. Okay. Now the Ramban goes further. The Amar is now he's off the miracle. He's going to go on to the story part. The Amar loses lechas arzazos l'rishta, and God's saying that I took you out of Ur Kasdim in order to give you this land, Eretz Canaan, as inheritance. So the original intent, okay, of saving Avraham from the miracle, from the Orkan, from the Kivshan Aish, from the, through the miracle, was in order to give him Eretz Yisrael as Yerusha. It's an amazing point that Ramban's mentioning here, is that it was almost like the purpose of the miracle was not simply to save Avram Avinu, but it was because to make Avram into a great nation who's going to inherit Eretz Yisrael. Right? Like there's a medrash, I came across a medrash, which I think is a similar idea. It says that it's on a pasuk in Mishlei, about Teres Zekanim B'nei Vanim. That like the glory of the grandfather is his grandchild, and it says it's referring to like Avraham and Yaakov, it's like a mashal. It says Avram is like a, it's like Avram being saved from the Kivshan Aish is like there's a mashal to a king who basically he wanted to kill somebody he rebelled against, and he's gonna die. But they saw in the future that he was going to have a daughter who was ultimately going to marry the king. And therefore, because of that daughter, the person's life was spared. So to Avram Avinu, when Nimrod threw in the Kivshan Aish, Kadosh Baruch Hu saw that ultimately Yaakov was going to come from Avraham, right? And it's Beis Yisrael, Beis Yaakov, and that's going to marry the king, Knesset Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, and Kadosh Baruch Hu at Sinai, right? So it's just like a similar idea is that the miracle that happened to save Avram Avinu, it's Lasseis Lachas Eretz Azos L'Rishta, it's like God wouldn't have performed a miracle simply for an individual to save his life. Right? Avram Avinu, he was saved because of Yaakov, because of Klal Yisrael. It's like the whole Hashkacha and the miracle to save Avram Avinu from, even though, yes, Avram was an opponent of Yichud Hashem, and he fought, and he battled, and he was dying al Kedesh Hashem, but, you know, a great individual, still, they're not going to have a miracle performed to save his life. But the only real reason that Avram was saved is because he was capable of producing from Avraham a great nation of Klal Yisrael, who would accept the Torah and be Yorish Eretz Yisrael. So like that was the it's like the open pasuk Ani Hashem Mashot Sesich Meir Kasim Lases Lachar as Arzuzos Larishta. It's like that is the objective of the miracle of Ur Kasdim and the Nes Eretz Yisrael and Klal Yisrael. You go ahead. Yeah, like a shkach like this of a Nes. Were it not for the fact that Avram Avinu ultimately ties into Klal Yisrael.
Yeah, as opposed to
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you could argue it's all types of Ashkacha. I don't know. But let's just say a miracle, a real miracle. Because you can draw a line between like a miracle and then there's like, you know, the standard Ashkacha. I don't want to get into that, but something like that. Right.
It's like a Nisnister, or it's like Ashkacha?
I mean, the Ramban considers the possibility that it was a Nisnister. So it seems like the Ramban's, it doesn't seem like he's only giving this pshat. You know, the Ramban holds the Nes Nistar and Nes Nigla. It's not really different. It's just what's obvious to the person. It's a miracle. God has to, so to speak, go into Nimrod's head and say, you know, I, for some reason, I'm feeling, you know, good today. That Avram guy who's tearing down my kingdom, let me set him free. So that's a miracle. You know, Paro chasing after, Ramban says that when Paro chases after Klal Yisrael, Ben Parshas Beshalach, after they leave Mitzrayim, to go bring all his army to go after them. They're Nevuchim Himba Midba. It's like the biggest, he said it's the biggest miracle of them all, is that somehow Paro gets in his head that he's going to go after the Eser Makos and Makos Bechoros that he's going to go chase after them. And then they follow them into the sea splitting. I mean, it's just like, there's no bigger miracle than the king just doing something like that. But like, on the other hand, like, king's at court. It's not the same thing as a sea splitting. Is the king deciding to, you know, it's a nace, but it's a little bit different. But either event, it's a, either case, it's a real, it's a nace. And the Ramban is saying here is that the nace is, it's like he's learning the pasuk, and I, you know, that medrash, I forgot exactly what it is, it's a medrash rabba. But it's showing you that the miracle, the nace done for Avram, no matter how great a person, you don't get greater individuals than Avram Avinu, but it's only because he's the Av of Klal Yisrael, right, the grandfather of Yaakov Yisrael, who's right, Shiftei Ka. So it's only because that the Hashgacha is, has an objective. The Hashgacha has an objective of Kiddush Hashem, Eretz Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael in the Torah. And if saving a person through a miracle is in line with that objective and can bring that further that objective, then there will be a miracle to save that person. But if it's simply going to be a dead end, just so Avraham Avinu is saved because he's a great tzaddik and he's a great person, and but that's going to be the end of it. He's going to be one individual, and then he's going to die, and that's going to be, there's no more movement, no more anything comes from it. So you, there's not going to be hashgacha to save that person. So he has more years in his life to pursue knowledge and to learn. Nothing comes out from it. It's got to contribute to the overall scheme of things. And since Avram ultimately did, that's why he was saved. But we're not for the fact that, like in the Mashal, that the person has a daughter who's going to marry the king, then the person doesn't need to sit, no matter how great the person is. It's only because ultimately is Eretz Yisrael and Klal Yisrael. It's pretty interesting. It's interesting. You would have thought almost, you wouldn't have thought, you would have thought that there's an idea of just for the individual who deserves a miracle, but it doesn't seem like it. It seems like it has to ultimately tie into the grand scheme of things. Okay. Now the Ramban goes on with the story. Okay, now he's going to work out the details. V'terach Aviv, v'Avraham, so now he's going to try to explain this. So Terach, Avram's father, and Avram, hayu b'libo min hayom ahu shenitzal, so from that day forward, when Avram was saved from the Kivshan, so they had it in their mind, sheyilchu Eretz Kanan, they're going to go to Eretz Kanan, l'hisrachik me'eretz kastim, mipachad ha'melech. So they wanted to distance themselves from Eretz Kastim, okay, because the king was going after them. Ki Charan, Karav Lahem, even though their home, their homeland was Charan, that was their home city. Nachor, according to Ramban, Nachor was living there. But Charan is too close to Or Kastim. So they decided they got to run far. Charan is not close enough. And they decided they're going to go all the way to Eretz Kanan. V'am echad usaf echad lekulam, and Charan and Or Kastim, they're one, they're really one, even though they're separate cities, different countries, they really were like one nation, they had one language. Ki lashon aramis lishneam, they both spoke this lashon aramis, Aramaic. V'ratu leches el amesher lo yishmulishono, hamelech ahu v'amo, so they wanted to go to a land which basically had a different language, like a totally separate society, totally removed. And Eretz Kanan was like a totally different society, a different language than Or Kastim. V'zehu tam v'yitzu itam mi Or Kastim aleches Eretz Kanan v'yavo ad Charan. So that's the reason, the pasuk is why they were intending originally to go to Eretz Kanan, not because of any special reason Eretz Kanan, it's just it's further from Nimrod, who's trying to kill him, and right, and they, and don't think, you know, and I, Avram was saved by an ace, yeah, but Haran wasn't saved by an ace. Haran died. So you see, you don't want to really bank on these miracles. They're not so, they don't want to bank on a miracle. Okay, Haran tried that, didn't work. The language is once it's like two different languages, then there's like no communication, there's no passage of information between the two societies. If they speak one language, then you could have travelers go back and forth and books and writing, whatever, and there's a communication. But if you're in a land that has a different language, nowadays things are a little different, not so different, but if you're in a land with a different language, then like there's like no way for information about Avram to get to Nimrod. So there's no communication between the two countries. They don't talk to each other. So they want... Charan had the same language as Or Kastim. That's why they said that Avram and Terach, so we got to go further than Charan. We got to go all the way to Eretz Kanan. If you want to picture in a line, you have Charan is in between Or Kastim and Eretz Kanan. So they say, let's go further. We got to go further. Go to Eretz Kanan. Okay, vayavo al Charan, but they ended up coming to Charan. Asher shamish bechoseim v'avoseim e'olam v'yashvu b'neiam v'nisak v'sham yam rabim. So they basically stopped off in Haran as an intermediate stop, which that's where the family was. They had family there. They had lived there for many years, many generations before Terach, and his father had lived in Haran. Why they went to Or Kasdim originally for a little bit, Rambam doesn't explain. But when they were running from Nimrod, they get to Haran and they stayed there, and you know, it became comfortable. Okay, and they decided, you know, we don't need to go to Eretz Canaan. The king's not really pursuing us, and our family's here, and they basically stayed in Haran. Visham, and in Haran, Nitzav Avram lasus mash ala b'dayto lechas Eretz Canaan. V'aziv es aviv. So in Haran, Avram gets the tzivoy, the mitzvah of lech lecha me'aretzacham, right? Latacham be'savicha. And he gets the mitzvah to leave his father in Haran and to go continue to Eretz Canaan. That which you originally thought to do, you should do it, but in the Torah's mitzvah now. Umeis sham b'Haran arzo, and Terach dies in Haran, which is Terach's land. V'hu halachim ishto v'lot ben achiv arzo Canaan. And Avram took Sarah and Lot, and they go to Eretz Canaan. V'zehu shamar kasav, as the pasuk says, v'ekachas avichem es Avram eiv hanar v'olich osu b'chor Eretz Canaan. Okay. Keep Eivar Hanar and Etzdava Bezet, because Avram got this mitzvah in Eivar Hanar in Haran. This is opposed to the Ibn Ezra, who learns that Lech Lecha happened in Or Kasdim. Okay, I'm not kidding. Fine. Misham Lachu V'Olichu B'Chor Eretz Canaan. Okay, good. That's the end of this first Ramban that I want to discuss. Okay? Now, so that's the story, right? This is the Ramban story. It's Avram and Terach, they leave Or Kasdim. They're planning on going to Eretz Canaan. Why? For practical reasons, according to this Ramban. But they stop off in Haran. That's where their family was. They stop off for a little bit, and they end up just staying there. Until ultimately, Avram gets the mitzvah of Lech Lecha, which is the beginning of the parasha of Yeperek Yudbeis Pasuk Aleph, to leave Haran, leave his father there, and go on to Canaan, Eretz Canaan on his own, and Lot and Sarah go with Avram. Okay, good? Now the Ramban in Lech Lecha. So if you skip to it's Perek Yudbeis Pasuk Aleph, the second part of the Ramban, El Eretz Asher Eka. Okay, the first part is where he's really ripping Ibn Ezra and Rashi about where Avram was born and his birthplace, and okay, fine. But I'm not going to get into that. So El Eretz Asher Eka. So the Ramban describes this journey that Avram had from Haran to Eretz Canaan. It was not a direct journey. He says, "Hayenodid v'holech migoy al gai mamlach el am acher." So Avram was like a wanderer, and he was a journeyman from one nation to the next. And he didn't just go directly to Eretz Canaan; he didn't know where to go. El Eretz Asher Eka. Basically, God didn't tell him, right? God didn't tell him which land to go to. He just said, "Leave your father's house and go to a land that I'll show you." So Avram said, "Okay." So he starts going. He goes here. God doesn't say anything to him. He goes to another country. Still nothing. He just keeps wandering. He doesn't know where he's going. He knows he can't be in Haran. He's going somewhere. And so he just keeps going from place to place, wandering. Achibol Eretz Canaan, until he ends up in Eretz Canaan. He ends up there. The Amalo Lazarcha Etenes, Eretz Azosa. And that's where the Mitzvah Tzivoy comes, and that's where the Nevuah comes, and says, this is the land that I'm going to give you and your Zerah to inherit. Okay, and that's what God tells him. This is the land that I was going to tell you. Oz niskayim ela aretz asher eka. That's when the land that I will show you was fulfilled, when he gets there, it's Canaan, and the nevuah says this zos aretz asher, right? Lazarcha etenes aretz azos. V'oz nisake v'yashavba. And that's when Avram said, okay, fine, I'm going to live here. He sets up camp, and he decides to stay in Eretz Canaan. Okay. Umash amar v'yitzu lechas Eretz Canaan. Lolis Yashiv ba ki dain lo yada. So the promise that the Ramban's going to say is, if you look at Lech Lecha, the Ramban's saying, he's saying that Avram was wandering from one nation to the next. But if you look in the Psukim, right, Avram's response to the mitzvah of Lech Lecha is El Eretz Asher Eka, where God doesn't set out the land to go to. If you look at the Psukim, it's pasuk Hey, is Vayikach Avram as Sarai Ishto ves Lo Ben Achiv ves Kol Rechusham Asher Rechashu ves Anefesh Asher Asu B'Charan. So they set out to go to Eretz Canaan. Initially, it doesn't sound like they're in Ramban. So it sounds like, again, they set out knowing that they were intending to go to Eretz Canaan. The Ramban's saying, no, they didn't know where they're going because El Eretz Asher Eka, God doesn't tell them which land to go to. So they basically have to wander. So why does it mean, what does it mean that they set out to Eretz Canaan? Sounds like he knew where he was going. Okay, so Ramban's going to explain, Masha Amar Vayitzu Lechaz Eretz Canaan. It doesn't mean that they were going there to live there because they still didn't know where is the land that God commanded him to go and live. The tzaddik, Avraham Avinu, a tzaddik, he just said, look, I'll set out, I'll go in that direction. Because like originally, when they left Orkastim, they were going to go to Eretz Canaan to run away from the king. He was on his way to Eretz Canaan anyway. He just got laid in Chara. Now he's got to go somewhere. So I guess he'll continue going to Eretz Canaan. But ultimately, he didn't just go directly to Eretz Canaan. This is how the Ramban's learning. It's difficult. But he said, ultimately, they were originally going to go to Eretz Canaan because of practical reasons, to run away from the king. But they end up in Haran, and they stay there. Then they get the mitzvah to go to some land which they don't even know about. Or Avram gets the mitzvah to go to some land he doesn't know about. And he sets off to continue to go to Eretz Canaan. Why? Because practically that's where he was going originally. But he doesn't end up just going directly to Eretz Canaan. He ends up wandering around. Something happened to kind of prevent him from going directly to Canaan. He ends up going everywhere until he ends up somehow back in Eretz Canaan. And that's when he gets the Nevuah. Okay. Kikin ha'yu b'dayto b'das aviv gamet chila b'tis mor kastim. Ubneze amar v'ahi kasher hisu oso l'kim b'is avi. And that's why the pasuk on Avram later on, he tells Abimelech that God caused me to stray from my father's house and wander. It's like a lost sheep. Is that Avram did not directly go to Canaan. He, even though he was intending to go to Canaan, he ended up wandering around all over the place because he didn't know. That was one of his tests. He didn't know where the land was until he ended up in Canaan and God says, hey, this is the right place. Okay, fine. Then the Ramban has a different shot. It's just an interesting shot. Is that just a whole other way of learning why Avram is always going to Eretz Canaan, right? Probably originally, you know, from more custom and over here, why is he going to Eretz Canaan before God tells him to? It's because he knew that Eretz Canaan was a special place. It's Nachas Hashem. That's the God's land. And that's where God is going to give his portion, whoever is designated for God, it's going to be in Eretz Canaan. Avram, he knew about this. How does he know about this, according to the Ramban? I mean, it would seem he's, you know, the Rambam in Mesoros Biyat HaKol, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perak Beis, right? Is that Makom Mizbeach, Adam was Makrif Karbanos in Makom Mizbeach, and Noach, when he left the table, was Makrif Karbanos there. And you see Rashi says that Malki Tzedek Melashalim was shame ben Noach in Yerushalayim. So it could be that there was known that Yerushalayim is a special place and Eretz Yisrael is a special place. And there was something unique about it. Somehow they knew that there was something unique about that. There was a Masorah there. I don't really know. Adon Rishon was created from there. Makom Kaparos Nivra. Somehow there was an idea, they already knew that Eretz Canaan was a unique place, and that's going to be the Ramban, it's like he's just saying it's possible. It seems like he almost favors the other pshat a little bit more, the practical idea, but he says you could also say this idea, it's possible that Avraham Avinu knew it. It's another way, that there really was something unique about this land, and Avraham Avinu knew it, and that's why he's always going towards Eretz Canaan. Okay. The Hemans, Avram trusted ki el Eretz Asher Ereka. When God says the land I'm going to show you, Yirmaz lo Eretz Canaan. O al kulo al achas mikol Eretz Asakel. V'sham panav el klar Eretz Yisrael ki sham Eretz Asher Enabemis. So he just trusted that the greatest land, God's saying, leave, I'm going to give you a land I'm going to show you, that some land, he trusted it's going to be the greatest land that this Nachas Hashem, Eretz Canaan, therefore he decided to go to Eretz Canaan. Okay, so it's an interesting, you don't like that pshat as much. It's tough.
It's not a test anymore, right? If you knew.
He didn't know. No, he didn't know.
Well, he knew.
No, he didn't know.
And
he just
last part saying that he knew it was God's land, so if God's saying go somewhere.
He just put two and two together. Okay, God says to land, I'm going to show you. He figures, you know what, what land would God want to give me besides some land? Where should I go? You can have to pick. See, the problem with the other one is it's like a random walk. Where do you go? You're just going to start wandering. Basically, the first strategy, you just started wandering. That was the mitzvah, wander. Just wander until eventually God's going to tell you you're at the right place. But the second pshat is saying, look, that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to wander. But it doesn't mean you can't use your own chachma to try to figure out what's the best choice here. Where would I want to end up? Okay, so insofar as I got to go to any, where do I want to end up? I'd like to end up there. Maybe that's the place. And he trusted, you know, maybe that's the way to go. Nachlas Hashem, Eretz Kanan. It's an interesting pshat. That's what? I don't know. It's like a machlok. I mean,
come on.
Is it? Did he just stam wander? He had no clue about Eretz Canaan. He just wandered, and until he ended up there by accident. And the whole reason Eretz Canaan there was just because of a chance event. And or the second shot is he had some idea. Even though the mitzvah was to wander, he had some clue that would say, insofar as you're going to have to randomly pick a land, might as well pick this one first. Because maybe there's something to it, there's a special
unique. It just sounds the same, because at the end of the day, yeah, when you're wandering, like.
Yeah, but the yeah. But he's saying, according to the second shot, is that he had reason to pick that land first. So he set out for Eretz Canaan, even though he didn't know which land it was, he set out for Eretz Canaan. He did set out for Eretz Canaan initially. Because.
Why would he not do that?
Well,
why would he ever not do that?
Go to Eretz Canaan?
Yeah.
According to the first shot?
Yeah.
What's Eretz Canaan? It was just
yeah,
a practical
thing.
Oh, but he didn't know that. According to the first shot, he's not holding in that.
He just doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that. How does he know that? How are you supposed to know that?
I don't know. You have to ask the second.
It's like ask the second shot. I know. It's a good question.
What was the Rambam you quoted? That what Noah? That's where he gave.
Oh, the Rambam says that it's a Masorah Biyatikol, that the Makom of the Mizbeach, right, is the Makom where Adam was Makar of a Karbon, where Noah was Makar of Karbanos, where Yitzchak was Nekad, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where Adam Harishon was created from, and he's Masorah Biyatikol.
What's so cool is that even Avram knew that fact, because at that point, we just know.
I know, how does Avram necessarily know that point?
No, but even if he knows that Adam was given a Korban there and Noah did, if that was some kind of Masorah, why would you make the leap that that's like God's land? Like, it has to be. Like, there's no idea of God's land without.
I mean, how does.
Without the Torah.
I mean, according to Ramban, how is Avram. Avram that he says that Tzaddik, right? Achaz Tzaddik Darko.
That's the first question.
That's the first shot? He says in Tzaddik? Oh, you're right. You're right. That's the first shot. Second shot, he just knows. He just knew originally.
Like, that is just like the land, like a superstitious thing. That's the idea. Like, oh, Noah was there, Adam was there.
That's well, that's not a superstitious thing. It's realizing that there's something unique about this place, that events keep happening in this place.
Let's do it, though.
I mean, all you have is Adam and Noah? Well, you have Shem set himself up there.
What was that because of the other two?
Saints really just two.
Maybe even just one. The second one.
You mean what's the second shot? How does he know?
Just piggybacking the verse.
I mean, how does he know without Nevuah? How does he know without Nevuah, according to the Ramban, that Eretz Yisrael is Nachlas Hashem? I don't know.
Yeah.
Look shows a place. Yeah, correct
here. I tell you what the Rav wanted to say. Let me turn this off. Okay, so Danny asked me questions. Do I have any ideas yet to explain like this Ramban of why he's wandering? Or so no, I don't have any ideas. Okay, I thought about it a little bit. I got nothing, but I'm just doing it because I want you to understand the basic pshat in all these psukim, the simple way to learn the story. Okay, where everything is according to its order. Okay, I'm just going to show you the Rashi. Okay, afterwards, just to show you what I'm doing, and we'll begin next week with this Rashi. Okay. Oh, summarize Ramban? Okay, went through the history of the thing, okay, is Avram starts off in Ur Kasdim. Avram Terach, Lot Sara, the king tries to kill Avram. Avram is saved through some sort of miracle. Okay, that's the history that Rambam, Rashi, Ramban, everybody agrees to. Then he leaves, okay? He, according to Ramban, he leaves to go to Eretz Canaan because he's running away from the king, and Eretz Canaan is further. But he stops off in Haran, and he stays there because they had family there, they were comfortable there, and they ended up staying there. In Haran, when Avram is 75 years old, Avram was 48 years old, right, when the Kivshanesh and Haflag occurs. When Avram is 75 years old, he's in Haran, he gets the mitzvah of Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Melatecha Be'savicha Eretz Asher Eka, is go to some land. So he leaves Terach behind in Haran. Avram, Lot, and Sarah start wandering until eventually they end up in Eretz Canaan. Maybe they were originally going to Eretz Canaan. They decided practical reasons. Maybe they had some sort of metaphysical reasons to go to Eretz Canaan. ultimately, they didn't really know which land they were going to go to, but they had a guess, and they end up going to Eretz Canaan. They get to Eretz Canaan. Avram is 75 years old, and God tells him, once he gets to Eretz Canaan, this is the land that I'm going to give you for inheritance. Right? And everything's good. It's Al HaSeder. Right? Simple. Okay, let me show you one Rashi. It's in Sefer Shmos. Okay, so it's in Sefer Shmos. It's Parshas Bo. It's Perek Yud Beis. Pasuk Mem. So it says, Moshe of Bnei Yisrael she yashu Mitzrayim shloshim shana v'arba me'er shana. So they were the amount of time that Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim was 430 years. Okay, 430 years. So Rashi says, shloshim shana v'arba me'er shana. Beinakol mishenolad Yitzchak arachshav hayu arba me'er shana. From the time that Yitzchak was born until the day that the Klal Yisrael left Egypt was 400 years. Okay, 400 years. Mishahayilo zer la'avram. Niskayim kigei yezerecha b'eretz lo lahem v'av divino sam av me'er shana. And the bris bein abasarim, which we'll look at next week, right, there's the, right, they make a bris, Avram and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that Avram's children are going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs for 400 years. And from the time that Yitzchak was born until Yitzias Mitzrayim was 400 years. Okay? Ushloshim shana hayu mishinigzera gzeras bein abasarim achnel Yitzchak. And the bris bein abasarim was 30 years before Yitzchak was born. Okay? And then Rashi goes on to explain why there's no other way to really learn it. Okay? But the bris bein abasarim according to Rashi, right, is when Avram was 30 years before Yitzchak was born. 400 years from when Yitzchak was born to Yitzchak's Mitzrayim, and the bris bein abasarim is 30 years before that. So it's 430 years from the bris bein abasarim when God made this whole deal with Avram that they're going to be enslaved and afflicted and God's going to take them out for a chosh gadol, right? So the other thing is, how old was Avram when Yitzchak was, How old was Avram when Yitzchak was born? 100. He was 99 when he did Bris Milah, right? And then he got the thing about Yitzchak. He was 100. Haben Me'a Shanim, right? Sarah was 90 and Avram was 100. Okay, we'll look at the Pesukim next week. Oh, it's open, okay? It's open and he's 100 years old. So 30 years before that, he's 70 years old. So according to Rashi, okay, Avram got the Bris Bein Basarim when he was 70 years old. It's open in Rashi that Avram was in Eretz Canaan. The Bris Bein Hasharim occurs in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Canaan, because it says it's Aras HaZos. Rashi says that he was in Eretz Canaan. Avram, he's 70 years old, is in Eretz Canaan. He gets the Bris Bein Hasharim, which says he's going to have the land. He leaves, goes back to Haran, stays there for 5 years. Then he gets the mitzvah of Lech Lecha to leave El Eretz Asherecha to some land, and he ends up going back to Eretz Canaan. Okay, we'll go through this next week. But that's what I want to show you is like how Ron.
Why does he have to learn that he left Eretz Canaan?
Because Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. It says when Avram is 75, he leaves Haran to go to Eretz Canaan.
Maybe that was before, no?
But Avram is 75. Okay. Avram got the Bris Bein Hasharim when he was 70. Okay, we'll take this up next week.
The Bris Bein Hasharim going
to drop. Yeah, according to Rashi, Bris Bein Hasharim is Avram's first nevuah.
Wow.
And you'll see the Torah basically. Because Bris Bein Hasharim occurred when Avram was 70, and Lech Lecha occurred when Avram was 75.
That's
open. The pasuk says openly Lech Lecha when he's 75, and according to Rashi, he's saying that's the difficulty. So all these Rambans are just for the sake of Rashi, okay? Okay, so hopefully next week we'll get some ideas for Rashi, and the Ramban will think about it. If we come up with anything, we'll talk about it.